Welcome back. Let's Get Physical Therapy is an educational podcast brought to you by MedStar Health and hosted by me, physical therapist Becca Schumer. I will be sharing the mic with tons of healthcare professionals with the goal of educating and inspiring fellow PTs and future PTs. We hope you find this both informative and inspirational, ultimately optimizing how we treat our patients and grow as professionals. Please enjoy today's episode. Today on the podcast, we have Nick Fisher, a registered dietitian. He went to school at Seton Hall University and graduated their coordinated program in nutrition and dietetics and became a licensed dietitian in 2012. His career has been a mix of clinical, sports, cooking, and community nutrition experience. One of the most shocking things he's learned as an RD is that the misinformation used to market food, diets, and nutrition certificates is one of the biggest contributors to people's poor diet habits. As an RD, Nick has worked with the Pittsburgh Marathon, Carnegie Mellon University sports team, USA Cycling, Arkansas Track Club, Freddie Few Cycling and Flat Tire Company, bike team, Core Life Healthcare, and now MedStar Health. Nick wanted us to know that his favorite food is French fries, his least favorite food is the food not in his mouth, and his biggest character flaw is that he can't stop buying bikes. He's got about 13 now. Hopefully you've been listening to some of our podcasts on ACLs, and we really wanted to touch on the nutritional component of rehab and how it impacts an athlete's ability to return to sport and heal from an injury or surgery. So we've got Nick on the podcast today to talk all things nutrition and how to optimize our nutrition post-op or post-injury to get our athletes back on the field safely and healthfully. Welcome, Nick, to the podcast. So glad to have you today.
Glad to be here.
My first question, I just read your bio, and I think everyone wants to know, you have 13 bikes. Where do you put 13 bikes?
One behind me. Let me do this. My wife's TT bike is there. Her mountain bike, her other TT bike. There's a single speed here because I rode that last night on a night ride. And then we have storage with all the other bikes.
For all the listeners that can't see this, he's basically in a crawl space, in a very tight crawl space. And there are bikes everywhere. I can confirm that. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a problem, I feel like, but it's a good problem.
So today's topic, we've been having a lot of podcasts on ACL recovery. We've spoken to some physical therapists, strength coach, surgeons, and I really want to tap into the nutrition piece as far as healing optimally from surgery and how nutrition plays a role in that. But first, I want to kind of hear about your story. How did you become a registered dietitian? How did you get into this field?
I guess when I was a little kid, I had an uncle that said, if you want muscles made of cake, you eat cake. If you want muscles made of fruits and vegetables, you eat fruits and vegetables. So that kind of stuck with me. And then to make a longer story, a little shorter, a girl I was dating at the time, her and her mom enrolled me in college or helped enroll me because I didn't know how to do it. And I got in somehow and had to start class the next week. And it was managing a restaurant, so I had to miss the first week of school and thought I would fail out anyways and ended up doing well, and here I am today.
What kind of populations have you worked with?
Oh, gosh. You give me preschoolers all the way up to the old as the earth itself. Everybody has to eat, so everybody.
I find it, when we Google on the internet, nutrition, all sorts of things pop up. But I know you kind of, I see your face, you're going one direction. I'm going a little different direction for a second. What is the difference between registered dietitian, licensed dietitian, nutritionist, sports nutritionist? Can you help us meander all these different names?
So it's kind of like the wild, wild west. You could have somebody who's never had an anatomy class, biology class, nutrition class, say have an interest in food, Google some stuff, not know if what they're reading is valid, and say they're a nutritionist because nobody's going to stop them. You could have somebody who has a master's degree in nutrition, but the school they went to didn't give them the medical aspect of it, so they couldn't become a registered dietitian. A registered dietitian is like the gold standard for your food expert because the education involves all the nutrition side, but all the medical side as well, which is then a federal exam and state licensure and federal licensure and continuing ed and all that stuff.
Got it. So what about sports nutritionists? Is that a separate certification? Is that a true thing?
Yes. So you have to become a registered dietitian to become like a certified sports dietitian. There are other organizations that you can get a sports nutrition certificate without necessarily being an RD. But then there, for every good program, there's about 1,000 very misleading, bogus programs, just a total debauchery of education, and they're just basically ripping people off.
Within our practice acts for physical therapy, the language we can use around nutrition changes. So I'm curious, from your standpoint, when is it important for us to identify when an athlete should be referred to a registered dietitian for a little extra help versus us kind of giving like general tips?
I think physical therapists have a really good understanding of that boundary and that line, because you all get to work with everyday people the same way I do, and they're subject to the same misinformation from personal trainers online who have very little experience in education, and that's influencing them. So when it comes to when to reference to a dietitian, anytime that your physical therapy spidey senses kick up, that there is some misinformation, some confusion that goes beyond just, you know, you should probably make sure you eat balanced meals and you should eat vegetables. Like, when you start to pick up on those red flags that it's more in depth than just basic food things, you send them to us. When there's socioeconomic class issues worked into it, dietitians really need to be very well versed in cultural sensitivity, economics, grocery stores, food supply chain disruptions. So anytime you get beyond just basic things, this much the same way people should be referring to physical therapists for those body ailments and injuries and recoveries, we're the food side of it.
Again, we're talking about ACL recovery mostly, but sometimes I'll get an athlete that comes in and we start working out and they start getting dizzy and lightheaded because they haven't eaten anything in all day or in like 8 hours. What are some good things that an athlete or patient can have before a treatment session? Because they're not just doing table stuff. Like, we're putting them through the rigor. So
I'm a huge fan of keeping your food simple. So outside of just consistent, balanced diets that have like your protein, your carb, your fruits and vegetables, that kind of stuff, when it comes to coming to something as strenuous as a workout or physical therapy, they need to focus on carbs and hydration, and then a lot less on the protein and fiber. So I tell my athletes, like, Snyder sourdough pretzels are one of my favorite things, because you can eat one or two of them. If you haven't had enough food yet, they digest quick. They're crunchy. They're salty. They're relatively inexpensive. And who doesn't like a pretzel? Then you can always go the route of like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, something as simple as that. But really making sure they're eating consistently and have like those backup foods available, so they come to work out with gas in the tank.
How soon before the session should they ideally be consuming this?
Oh, so this is where it really helps to work with somebody. I don't like a big meal before a workout or something like that. My wife could eat anything she wants and she'll be fine. So for me, I like a 2-hour window between a meal and a workout with something like a pretzel right before it. But that's going to be a personal preference as to how much food you eat. My wife could do it 30 minutes before and she'll be fine. But you want it to be digested and out of your stomach, so you have blood in your muscle, not in your gut.
When patients are post-op and they're on certain medications that might blunt their appetite, or they're moving a lot less, so naturally their appetite might decrease a little bit, how do you encourage these athletes the importance of continuing to nourish themselves in order to heal?
Oh, yeah. I give some good examples. Whenever guys would break their collarbones and like bike racing, they were always upset because they'd get plated or whatever, and they'd have a couple weeks off. They'd be all worried that, oh, their performance is going to suffer and this and that. Then those cats come back into their first race and they smoke us because they've actually had recovery time. So it's like they need to take into account that injury time is not wasted. It can still be great for recovery and working on other things. And as far as the food part, you know, maybe part of that recovery is that your muscles are growing now because you're not crushing them every day and you're actually recovering. And your glycogen stores are more full because you're not depleting them. So you have more water weight. So maybe you gained quality weight. So as long as you're keeping your diet a good quality, you know, relatively balanced diet, you're going to be okay. If you're doing gluttonous things or, you know, you're doing things we all know that we shouldn't be doing, like eating a whole bag of potato chips at night, you know, if you're not doing those things, you're going to be relatively okay.
What is the importance of nutrition and healing? Like, why is this topic so important? Why I want to have you on today to talk about this?
Yeah, so if you're in a house and a tornado hits it and rips off part of your house and you don't have building supplies the following week to build it, you have a broken house. If you break down muscle and you don't give it, honestly, people neglect carbs way too much with muscle growth and development. So your carbs with your protein, all of the vitamins and minerals like zinc, magnesium, iron, calcium, vitamin C, like they all play roles in developing bone density, muscle, nerve development, tissue development. So if you don't have the building supplies or you have really poor quality building supplies, you are going to recover more poorly. One of my athletes in Arkansas, he is like, I love him and I hate him at the same time because he'll spend 3 months before nationals with a spot on diet, but then the rest of the year of his workouts and things, he's eating gummy bears. So I'm like, dude, you built a house made of straw most of the year, but then you made a really nice front door. So it's super important.
Not just nutrition, but also hydration. What role does hydration play in all of this as well?
Hydration is the communication of your body. It communicates the kidneys to get rid of things. Your cells need enough water to communicate, to transport things through your blood. So it plays a role in every single thing. Without water, we don't have life. So if somebody isn't hydrating well, number one, as an athlete, shame. Like, you need to do better with that. But people in general could really benefit from just simply getting more water in their day. It's everything.
I've heard, and please correct me if I'm incorrect in saying this, that it's ideal to consume half your body weight in ounces of water a day. Is that true?
That is a good starting point to look at with people. But, you know, like every guideline, it's looking at a vast array of people. And then we have to start to look at the individual as we get closer to them. So I tell everybody, if you're drinking enough that you're peeing many times a day, not every hour, but like you're peeing many times a day and you're seeing your pee go from a light color to closer to clear, and you're kind of in that window, you're doing enough. In the morning, your pee is going to be darker because everybody's is. But as you're hydrating through the day, watch your urine color, and that's going to be your indicator.
I think post-op hydration sometimes gets missed because athletes are used to consuming a lot of fluids during practice or during games. And now that they're not doing all of that, then that kind of falls to the wayside.
Yeah. Another thing that impacts that is a lot of times athletes, they may have the idea that their post-workout meals need to be bigger and like crazy huge, and they've had a hard workout, and then their stomach is so full, it's hard to keep hydrating. Whereas if they actually had smaller, more balanced, frequent post-workout meals, they would have that room. And people recovering from injuries, I mean, you know, they're moving less, they may have less appetite, but remembering to stay consistent with that is going to be key.
With regards to building muscle, obviously, when you have surgery, there's going to be a lot of atrophy. So we want to optimize everything, have a perfect environment to build muscle again. What are recommendations for protein amounts or good sources of protein for us to consume?
Yeah, obviously, I would stress to athletes first and foremost that they're not sleeping enough. Well, we need to really, really hammer that part home. When it comes to the protein, you're going to have 1.2 gram per kilogram up to like 2 gram per kilogram. I tell people, cut your weight in half, that's your base. So if I'm 160 pounds, what is that? 80 grams of protein. And you can go up to, you know, maybe like 1.5 times that, a little higher. You can definitely increase your protein. But if you're getting like, you know, there was one personal trainer who told one of my patients they need to eat like 200 grams of protein at like 140 pounds. I'm like, yeah, come on. You've entered into excess. So if you go up to your weight, I'm not going to be concerned. But when you start getting crazy amounts that are exceeding your weight in grams of protein, we're getting a little carried away.
What can happen if they're over-consuming? Obviously, if they're over-consuming protein, they're under-consuming other macronutrients, right?
That's going to be the big thing that people don't get right away, is that in order to make room for all that protein, you then have to sacrifice other things like, for example, fibrous vegetables, which is part of your gut health. So that's the first thing. If they are consuming excess protein, they then run the risk of maybe they're exceeding calories too greatly because it's a high fat protein or something. So they don't feel as well, or they're sacrificing carbohydrates, so they don't have the energy. Or the real big thing is, if somebody is in that psychological mindset of more, 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 are they then developing poor habits that later in life get them in trouble? So couple ways to look at that.
Is there a higher demand when there is a compromise to the system?
Like surgeries are definitely going to require more proteins. You're trying to take a tissue that was beyond like workout damage, like it's cut and it's having to like really rebuild. So you're going to have higher needs there. Obviously other really big injuries, somebody's like a burn victim, huge protein needs and hydration needs, but it doesn't like, let's say somebody has ACL surgery, their recovery needs require more protein, but it doesn't call into effect like, you know, going over their weight in grams of protein. It's just an increase in it.
Is there an optimal time to consume protein? Like if you have all that in one meal versus spreading it out versus before workout, et cetera, is there any truth to any of that?
Yeah, this is a really good topic, actually. Think about a person on a 24-hour window. Every time that they eat enough protein, quality protein, and with carbohydrates, like a balanced meal, basically, in theory, their body will have a rate of increased protein synthesis right after that. For, you can't tell how long it'll be, but say anywhere from 1 to 3 hours. So if you are eating consistent meals in that window, that 24-hour window, you're going to get more windows of increased building. So spreading it out and getting enough is way better than getting just huge protein loads.
Any other recommendations on specific types of protein? Is protein powder okay? Obviously, probably one unprocessed protein is probably optimal over a protein in a tub, but is that true?
They're all going to give you the amino acids. That's what it's going to be. It's going to come down to what's going to help them be consistent and enjoy it and be able to maintain it. You will not find me drinking a protein shake. That is never going to happen. I prefer food. So I will go make a couple scrambled eggs and throw it in a burrito and make myself that my protein bar, my protein shake. But if somebody has 3 kids in the morning and they got to get out the door and they need to have a protein shake with, you know, take some fruit with them, or after a workout, they're taking a kid somewhere, then that's a perfect thing to have for them. So the consistency is going to be the goal.
We treat athletes from the high school level, the pro level, to weekend warriors, et cetera. Cost-wise, what is, like, I don't know, top 5 protein sources someone can buy, from really affordable to like creme de la creme?
Yeah. Eggs used to be more affordable, less affordable now. Honestly, if you can find any protein that's going to be on sale, like I'm a big fan of pork loin, because you can get a big pork loin for like $2 a pound and you get tons of meat out of it. If you can find like chicken breast when it's on sale, great option. But then we also want to work in some of the plant-based ones like canned beans. While they aren't as optimal or as bioavailable of a protein, they come with all of these other benefits that your chicken doesn't have, like fiber, carbohydrates that are really, really complex. They're really, really cheap. So finding some lean proteins, working in some seafood into your diet, you know, get some salmon, get some cod, but then start looking at things like black beans, kidney beans, work in some tofu every now and then because it's easy and there's no reason to not include it. So it's getting a variety of those things. And if somebody's eating appropriate amounts of protein, they're going to be not in excess, which is going to save them money by default.
Going back to, I spoke earlier about an athlete coming in and they haven't eaten all day, or it's been a long time since they've eaten and their face turns white and their heart rate goes up and they're just not looking so hot. What are some other ways to identify an athlete that may be under fueling?
Oh man. So I find that from my athletes to my bariatric patients, my athletes sometimes have worse diets than my bariatric patients because they're subject to the same misinformation. But a lot of times athletes have their body's more on display in their sport, or there is a strength to weight ratio or weight-based sports. So sometimes their influences from food can hit a little differently than a bariatric patient. Not to say that one has an easier time or not, but so a lot of times I find athletes are under-fueling, not just in total calories, but they're under-fueling in quality food because they have the mindset of, oh, I'm an athlete, I can eat junk and it's okay. So if you see people, one, who aren't able to sustain their higher levels of exertion, or you know that they're going to McDonald's right after their workouts, or they're eating that stuff on the way in, not to say that McDonald's would be bad, but they can make better choices. If they're talking about it, or if you see the athletes who are really micromanaging their food choices, that's a large red flag because we could be looking at eating disorders, the female athlete triad, we could be looking at orthorexia. So micromanaging of food and being really strict is one of my biggest red flags.
We're going to be interviewing a sports psychologist, so I don't need to totally get into the female athlete triad portion and red S, but a lot of people used to only know about female athlete triad, but there's something called red S that's more commonly used now, right, to incorporate men into it, because female athlete triad previously was about, or one of the topics or one of the categories was amenorrhea. So red S is relative energy deficiency in sport, correct?
Yeah, it's basically you're just not eating enough. And I see it a lot with my cycling people. My triathletes are like textbook under eating, under fueling with carbs, and they're the ones who need the most. So it's super common with our female triathletes and the male ones as well.
Is there any other things to be aware of with red S and when to refer out with that?
Like I said, physical therapists have a good spidey sense when there seems to be that misinformation, misguided behaviors. Really, if an athlete is looking to really improve their performance, they should at least talk to a dietitian who is in that world with sports, just to make sure that we can get rid of misinformation, get them going the right direction. So if they really are curious, they should talk to us. If they're not as serious about it and it's more just, you know, weekend warrior stuff, eat your food.
How do you address concerns regarding, I guess it's kind of goes into body dysmorphia, but we get athletes that are used to looking a certain way. They've got these muscles and then suddenly their leg doesn't look normal again. How do you address those concerns?
When it comes to something like that, and there's going to be like that psychosocial part to it, I like to have really candid conversations about mental health and what exists out there to deal with that, even like a sports psychology kind of idea, because you're still focusing on the performance side of it with that sports psychology idea. So I like to really let them know that if there is an emotional, psychological part that is outside of just controlling the diet and this and that, that for their long-term benefits and success and ability to return to sport and, you know, live their lives, they really need to take a step back and think introspectively about mental health and what they feel it could do for them.
Scar healing, you brought up burn patients and the importance of nutrition for that, but even for healing scars, how does nutrition play a role in that?
If somebody has a generally balanced diet, they're getting enough, like their protein, like vitamin C has a huge role in tissue development and your skin and things like that. If you have a well-balanced diet, you're going to be maximizing a lot of what you can do. You could find some research that talks about like zinc and vitamin C and certain levels to it. At some point, you're not going to know if you doing that actually made a difference, because there's not going to be like a comparison scar to look at. But if you're not eating well and hydrating, and addressing your mental health, the scar aside, there's gonna be other damage then too. So general diet, but looking big picture.
Energy drinks. Any thoughts on energy drinks and whether athletes should be consuming those, especially close to a workout session?
I think they taste terrible. Just give me some black coffee and we'll call it a day. I think they're really expensive. If somebody likes them and they want that caffeine, is that pick me up and it decreases that sensation of exertion some and kind of gets them a little motivated, that's one thing. If you are not sleeping and you're exhausted and you need them to get you just to go, like, we got to talk about everything. If you're, you know, drinking 800 milligrams of caffeine before you get to the gym, like, let's bring some reality into this. So if people are using them because they enjoy them, it's a little bit of a pick me up. That's one thing. If they're a band-aid to a bigger issue, we need to be a little more realistic with our expectations and habits. The marketing on the front of them, like the guarine and the taurine, it's like, if you look at research, it's like, you need a bucket of that to get it to do what it's supposed to do. And even then, like, you also need your sleep and your diet and your hydration. So like, yeah, you have one nail to rebuild that house. Good job.
Well, wrapping up here, what are some simple things, simple tools that physical therapists can use to better help our athletes tackle nutrition better?
Yeah. Oh gosh. I'm sure having images of like just basic images of pre-post workout meals or images of what balanced meals look like could be a really effective way to expose them to the idea without making it too heavy-handed, but also kind of unload off the plate off of you guys as well. Just because when you're dealing with patients, you're dealing with all of the aspects of them, not just their knee pain. Are they going through a divorce and that's helping with the knee pain to be worse? You know what I mean? So having, I think, simple images, but then access to dietitians could be a really good way to do it. Me and my wife always talk about how, like, if you could put a dietitian in every physical therapy office, oh, talk about dreams. Like, that would be like my dream job. Just because it's they go hand in hand. And honestly, if people would see what healthy diets look, I'm air quoting healthy, what they actually look like, they might realize that when they think they're being healthy, they are actually really far from it, just because of the confusion with everything.
I would air quote the diet part too, because when you say diet, that can mean a whole set of things too.
If I can get every single person in our country to eat 3 or 4 meals a day, starting with a 4 ounce of protein option, it could be vegetarian, meat, whatever, a mixture of the two, at least one cup of carbohydrate option, you know, your starchy vegetables, throw them in there, grains of any kind, and then 1-2 cups of like non-starchy vegetables and fruit, I would be probably out of work in 2 years' time. And that would be the greatest thing ever, because that means everybody's healthier.
Well, Nick, I'm sorry to bring it to you, but because of diet culture, that'll never happen. You're stuck with your job forever.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I love it. This has been really, really helpful. I hope PTs take something away from this conversation on how we can better talk about nutrition and understand it ourselves and its role in healing after surgery, after an injury, all the good things. One question I have left for you, which we're asking all of our guests, what is a favorite quote that you live by that motivates you? It doesn't have to be related to nutrition. It can be if you want it to, but what drives you?
Yeah, so a lot of times with nutrition, people really make it overcomplicated and they try to micromanage what they're doing because they've received so much misinformation. And at the end of the day, I want to take the pressure off of food with my patients. I want them to leave a meeting with me feeling that they have control and that they can't just like mess up their diet because of something they ate. So I tell all of my patients that no matter what you ate today, it makes a turn tomorrow. So like, just quit stressing about it. Move on.
I love it. That's great. Nick, where can people find you on the interwebs or social media, et cetera? Where do you live?
You can, I'm in Abingdon, but the internet puts me everywhere. So you can find me at MedStar. I'm in their general surge bariatric unit in Franklin Square and in Bel Air. And then I also do stuff with the running program. Call me at the office. Look up MedStar Bariatrics. The office number is 443-777-1158. If you call and ask me, they'll just send me a message and I'll talk to anybody. I don't care.
Great. Thank you so much for your time. This has been awesome. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Let's Get Physical Therapy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram at MedStarHealthPT. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review so we can reach more listeners just like you. As always, we appreciate your time and hope you join us for our next episode.